This morning I saw a message on the podcast from an old friend, Kishori Das. Kishori joined in Chicago whilst I was there as temple president. We used to go out on Sankatana at O'Hare Airport, and he wrote briefly of an incident in 1979 when I took sannyas. Prior to that, we'd gotten a large donation of, anyway, a large amount of money for buying all kinds of paraphernalia for Kishori, the deities of Chicago Temple. And so we went to India early. I remember going to Mysore and purchasing lots of incense. And while in Mysore, we both got sick. And he sort of recovered. And but whatever it was, I continued to carry with me. And from Mysore, we went back to Calcutta. And from Calcutta, we went to Puri. We were going there for a little while before heading to Mayapur, where the Gaur Purnima festivals were taking place, and I was receiving sannyas. I remember I wanted to visit Bhubaneswar temple because Bhagwat Das, who was at that time collecting for the construction of the temple, was doing so in Chicago. And I remember we couldn't even get anyone to drive us. No one knew where it was. No one knew the highway. No one knew what ISKCON temple was. And when we got there, finally someone did manage to figure out what it was that we wanted and where we wanted to go. There was absolutely nothing. There was just one hut, which was the hut that Srila Prabhupada stayed in. It was Gaur Govinda Maharaj's residence, and Srila Prabhupada's Bhajan Kutir. Srila Prabhupada stayed there and completed the ninth canto and began the tenth canto right there. And aside from that, it was just, I couldn't figure out what it was that Bhagwat Das was collecting for. Of course, if devotees go there now, then they see the beautiful temple that's Bhubaneswar Center, and the whole area is like, it's a downtown. That time it wasn't a downtown, it was a jungle, there was nothing. All I can remember is that we walked, and there was one devotee who took us to the top of a little hill and said that this is where the temple is going to be. And then we got back into the car. It was very, very hot sun, and we started going towards Puri, and about halfway to Puri, I was extremely feverish and dizzy, so I couldn't even sit up anymore. I had to lay down in the back seat, and for the next 3 days, it was the only time in my life that I thought that I was going to leave my body. By the time we got to Puri, I was just barely communicative. I could chant Hare Krishna, but I had to leave everything to Kishori. There were just the two of us. And he checked us into a hotel on the Puri beach. I think it was the Puri Hotel. And first we got not such a good room. Later on we got a room upstairs. Although I remember that it was very difficult for me to even walk, and I didn't know what I'd gotten. I still don't know to the present day whether it was sunstroke, some kind of fever. And Kishori was writing in the little message that he sent that he was running around Puri looking for a doctor, and a couple of doctors came by, as I remember. They gave some medicines, but nothing really did any good. And arguing with rickshawalas over a few rupees while he had all this $20,000 strapped onto him, because it wasn't going to do any good being with me. And I was in that state for 3 days and nights, not eating or I think just drinking. That's all I did. It was quite uncomfortable. Some devotees, ironically enough, some devotees from Toronto came by and saw me, but then they left for Mayapur. No one stayed there. Kishore just stayed there and nursed me and took care of me. And then gradually I recovered, and then I can remember that we went bathing in the sea, and we waited some time. In fact, I just arrived in Mayapur the day before the sannyas ceremony. If anyone sees the picture of that ceremony, it was myself and Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj, and Yamuna Maharaj took sannyas at that time. I was really, really skinny. I probably hadn't eaten for about a week. And I was already, after being in India for 2-3 weeks and not eating much. It was quite an adventure. I took it as some real purification before entering into the renounced order of life. And then, if I remember right, Kishore went to England. Yes. And we went back together, and we flew back together because we came together. We flew back together. And then I think that he was extremely sick on the way back, and I accompanied him as far as I could out to the terminal, and then I didn't get to see him for another year or so later until I left Dallas. I was in Texas at that time, until I left Texas and moved to the UK. And then we continued on there. He was doing Sankirtan and some memories from way back when. Today is, by declaration of the UN, World Peace Day. I heard it on the radio in my mother's place, otherwise I wouldn't have known. I don't know what that means, International World Peace Day, for people in Darfur, where hundreds of thousands have been killed and millions displaced, or those in Iraq and other turbulent places of the world, peace day doesn't mean anything. And for other places where people aren't necessarily subjected to those type of horrors, and they're living in relative peace, peace doesn't mean much for them either. And how can there be World Peace Day? Because people can't agree on how to live. There's always a conflict of interest based upon individual sense gratification, and attempts at peace never really quite make it. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, that the United Nations was established to unite the nations of the world, but that hardly succeeded. The nations of the world are not united. They remain disunited. And there's as many wars now as there were before. Perhaps different type of wars, but it's going on. And more people have died since the Second World War than during the Second World War. My mother keeps reminding me of their experience of so-called peace, how at the end of the Second World War, everyone was so fed up with war and killing that they thought, now finally we'll have peace. The countries of the world have will learn the lesson and they'll be smart enough to avoid wars in the future. But that wasn't the case. And they're despairing how people, despite the past, despite history, despite suffering, continue to be so aggressive and cruel to each other. Because there are no material solutions. The solution is, as Krishna lines out in the end of the fifth chapter, Bhaktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suidam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the proprietor. Everyone is meant to serve him, and everyone has to be subordinate to him as the supreme well-wisher and friend of all. This becomes the Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati. This becomes the basis of the peace formula, as Srila Prabhupada would say it. So world peace, if the world really wants peace, they should follow Krishna's instructions. Let's look at a question here. Kanchan Valley asks, you mentioned in one podcast that it's nice if devotees spend some time remembering what Lord Krishna is doing each day according to the leelas described as Ashtakaliya Leela. What are the beginning and end times of each of the eight periods? Well, my answer to this question is read Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna book. Make notes and see what does Krishna do in the morning hours, what does he do in the afternoon, what goes on at night when he's doing Rasa Leela with the gopis. Part of answering a question or understanding answer is if one can answer it for oneself by research and study. So although there are technical timelines for the eight periods of the day, those are really the detail. The detail is what can we remember of Krishna's Naimitika Leela, what can we remember of Krishna's Nitya Leela, and if we do the work ourselves to discover these as they're described in Krishna book, they will certainly have a lot of meaning for us. So I suggest that the devotees who want to know that, they should look that up for themselves. And then if you want some further clarification, then ask and I'll let you know. And Dharma Setu asks that Srila Prabhupada says that Kubja represents Krishna's Bhushakti potency. His question is, what is the Bhushakti? Well, my answer is that if you put in the folio Bhushakti, you will get a few references that Srila Prabhupada will then answer what it is. And is Kubja present in Krishna Leela in the spiritual world? Well, let's examine the nature of Kubja's relationship with Krishna. The nature of the gopis' relationship is they have no desire whatsoever for their own personal enjoyment. They only want to please Krishna. The nature of the Mahishi or the queen's relationship with Krishna is that they want to give Krishna enjoyment, but they also want to enjoy the position of being Krishna's beloveds. And Kubja's relationship with Krishna is that she wants to enjoy herself with Krishna. In other words, her desire cannot be said to be spiritual. Therefore, at least with this relationship, Kubja is not present in the spiritual world. However, because Kubja represents the Bhushakti, which is the eternal Shakti of the Lord, therefore, in some pure form, certainly she is there. More on this I can't say because I cannot remember having read anything to the effect, and I would have to do further research on it. And finally, Balaram Das is asking that I plan to hold a seminar in the Nam Hat camp. Is there any hope to hear that seminar? Yes, I did. I prepared a whole seminar, which was actually about, it wasn't about surrendering, as Balaram Prabhu mentions here, but it was about the experiences that I had in Krishna consciousness since I came in contact with it. And I thought that they would be quite instructive for devotees. However, I ended up falling sick in Kazakhstan and never really made it to make that seminar, which would have lasted for 3 days, and even then I think would have been in a pinch for time. I could probably have stretched it out to 4 or 5. So if someone reminds me somewhere, perhaps I can do it when I'm at one of our temples for a longer period of time. Okay, everyone, I'm going to go and send this off as my offering of love to you all, and I hope that everyone is fine and happy. Hare Krishna.